This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
All right, so this isn't the first time we've talked about this. We know there's guys out there looking to last longer, go a few extra rounds, if you know what I mean.
Everyone wants to be confident when it's time to head to the bedroom. You need to just go to BlueChew.com, and BlueChew.com has the first chewable that brings your performance to another level.
And check this out. They've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work.
They're chewable, so they can work faster.
And you can take them anytime, day or night, even on an empty stomach.
And this stuff is cheaper than those other two, so this is a no-brainer. Basically, if you like sex, you'll like BlueChew.com.
Plus, you don't have to have one of those awkward doctor visits. BlueChew's online physician consult is free. Once approved, your order will ship straight to your door in a discreet package.
And we have a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free. That's right, free, when you use promo code Hollywood. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code Hollywood.
And then you can thank us afterwards. What up, buddy?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing so good. Excited for today's guest.
Today is going to be a good one. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is the podcast. Unlike Ellen, we keep our whole employees. They're all nice. They're all very happy. We have
so
a very happy
just
staff.
Just you and me. You, me,
just
and,
you and me.
And Pat. Pat, who edits our staff.
Pat is our editor and also our human resources. So if there's any complaints, Dax, just go right to him about me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, can you imagine? I have to do a letter for the both of us and explain to the company. Say, hey, guys, I'm really, man, it's terrible, but
what,
I mean,
what crazy story with this whole Ellen thing. You know what? At the same night, I'm not
hashtag
that surprised.
Hashtag take down Ellen.
No, but I love Ellen. I do. I know I've heard many stories over the years that she isn't the easiest person to work with, but she's entertaining, and I like her on TV. Let's just say that.
Isn't it crazy, though, like, the stories we've known for years, for instance, Harvey Weinstein, we all knew he's a dirtbag for years. It finally comes out. Ellen, we've heard stories about working there, you know.
Well, I've heard rumors. I've heard that it's not that fun behind the scenes. But at the same time, it's also hard to go, well, I didn't work there, so I don't know what it's really like, you know. And there's a lot of people that talk shit on their job. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know what's interesting, though? It's hard, though, especially in the entertainment field, because we all sign NDAs, so you're not really allowed to speak. You have no platform to speak. So
I'm going to talk so much shit on you, though, once this is up. We have no NDAs. Oh, I'm going to tell all your dirt.
Oh, no, all the dirt. Then you're going to talk about that. And I'll tell everyone how you mistreat the staff. Try me, Dax. Try me.
All right, let's get into this. I'm excited to talk to Brian Austin Green. So let's give away
our
autograph.
Before we get to him. Yes,
and then
Dax,
we can get
review.
Brian on here. Okay, so let me. So as everyone knows, if you are, if you listen to our podcast on a regular basis, we give away a celebrity autograph once a week to the best comment left on either iTunes or Stitcher page. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to read one, and then Adam will give out an autograph thanks to our friends over at Autograph City and Primetime Signatures. But this one comes from KateG95. There's a lot of T's in there. The title says, "This podcast spills the best tea. You guys get the best guests, and the interviews are always so juicy, but without the awkwardness other hosts seem to create. So happy to listen to a podcast where the controversial guests aren't being bullied. This makes them divulge so much more tea, and I live for it." So, 5-star review. Thank you, Cat G. Adam, who is Cat G getting autograph wise?
So I put my name in a hat, and I have a few names
put,
in there.
You put your name in the hat? No one wants your signature, bro.
Oh, they don't want my autograph? Okay, forget about it. There you go. So I pick out a name and see whose name I get. I have a bunch of autographs. And it is Tim Allen.
Ooh, I like Tim Allen. That's a good one.
Tim Allen, Home Improvement. Tim Allen autograph. coming to you. So DM me your address. DM me, say, hey, you called my name. DM me, and I will send you an autographed photo of Tim Mallon. Thanks to our friends at Primetime Signatures and Autograph City. They are the best celebrity autograph people out there. I mean, they kill it on Facebook. I mean, they do these mystery boxes. Huge success. Shout out to them. Dax, tell us about our guest today.
Oh, so excited. So our guest today, obviously, you know him as an actor or producer, someone we all grew up with from his days on the original Beverly Hills 90210, Brian Austin Green. Welcome. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man.
Yeah?
It's crazy. Yeah.
There's been
a lot.
Look
at this fucking beard, man. Look at this.
I know. Look how beardy you're getting. This is huge.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I'm going to have to trim this at some point soon. Not cut it. Just trim it. Just make it look like presentable.
Yeah. I mean, if you shave it all off, there goes all your power. So you don't want to
shave it off. It's like shaving off dreads.
I just shaved mine the other day. Mine was getting pretty long. And then I was like, you know what? Having the mask on, it was really annoying with like a facial hair. So I was like,
see, you know what? I feel the opposite because it pushes the mask away from my face a little bit. So it gives me a little sort of like breathing room around there. And the beard hair, it makes a good filter.
Yeah. How do you age so well? I got to know. I mean, seriously, like,
dude, you're beautiful.
Come on. What's going on?
I work out. I don't fucking eat.
You don't drink. I think that's one thing that I learned about you.
You don't drink.
And I think looking at you, I'm going to have to stop drinking, but I can't. So we're going to move on from that. But that's
you know
your key.
You know what I found, like, as I got older, because I used to drink when I was a kid, the hangovers they just got so insane. It was like, you know, it would take me like 2 or 3 days to fully recover from one night of drinking. And it was like, I can't. This sucks. I'll smoke weed and I feel great the next day, you know, so I'll just stick to that one.
I think that's what a lot of people say when they get older. Like, the hangover is brutal. If you just smoke some weed, and then at least you don't have a hangover. You wake up and you're fine.
John
Mayer said something really good about weed. He said, like, alcohol, if I give 2 hours of alcohol, it takes 20 hours away from me. But if I give, you know, 45 minutes to weed, it doesn't take away from any of my life. Like, there's no hangover. It's just fine.
That's a really good view, and it's true.
Are you still doing your crazy diet where you were eating butter that I've made fun of you for like 4 years about?
Oh, the keto?
Yeah.
The keto diet? No. I do that on and off. I'll do it every once in a while just for, I don't know if you've ever done a keto diet. So the idea is that you eat healthy fats and then your body burns through whatever fat it has stored. With the ketone levels inside of your blood and your body sort of take over and do that. And it's cool, but it's sort of, you do it for like 2 months here and there. It's not a diet that you live on because you're not supposed to eat carbs at all. And it's insane. I mean, you can't, you know, you get to the point where it's like, okay, no fruits or vegetables or any of that. It's not super healthy. It's great when you're on the diet because your energy feels great. And then you have to get back to a little bit of normalcy, you know?
So were you actually taking blood and like checking your ketones that way?
Yeah. I ordered them on Amazon. It was, I used the same sort of test kit that you would use for like glycemia, you know, for blood sugar testing, but it's just for ketones. So it would literally tell you just by putting a drop of blood on something, what your ketone levels were for the day. And then I had an app in my phone that was like, I could put in what I was eating, how much weight was, you know, in meat that I was eating, and how many sticks of butter and whatever I was doing. And so it sort of don't make that face, Dax.
It is.
Dude, you're not being supportive at all.
The idea of eating butter that's not on toast or not on like corn on the cob sounds so gnarly to me.
I wasn't eating regular butter. So the idea is that you eat healthy fat.
Ghee.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're eating grass-fed butter. So you're eating.
I'm doing
it
now, by the way. So
are you?
Yeah. I'm not doing keto, but I'm doing like grass-fed butter. Well, ghee.
Yeah.
And with eggs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm grass-fed
butter.
More fat than sugar. Yeah.
There's a company too that Kerrygold that makes the butter that's grass-fed,
that's what I'm
they
taking,
make cheese also. So really? they make grass-fed shredded cheese. See, Dax, go fuck yourself. Yeah, go sit on your bed, okay? We'll take this from here.
When he told me this, I've literally been making fun of him for like 3 years about eating sticks of butter. I think it's so funny. But, it works. I've seen your shirtless Instagram photos. It fucking works.
And honestly, those sticks of butter, they become like candy in a weird way. Like as you start cutting up cubes of butter and you salt them a little bit, they're fucking delicious. And especially when you're really hungry throughout the day, you eat a cube of butter and you're like, God, that was the best cube of butter I've ever eaten.
Dax, I'm with Brian on this. Honestly, it's pretty good.
It really is.
Do you butter in your coffee?
I did for a while. So you're talking about like the bulletproof coffee?
Sure, yeah.
I did for a while, but I have colon issues with the acidity in coffee. So I try and stay away from coffee as much as possible. And that bulletproof coffee was so acidic that I would drink that and, you know, I'd feel it for like 2 days.
Oof.
Yeah, so. I love biohacking. I love all this stuff. It's great, man. I could nerd out with you about this stuff. I'm trying to be like a superhero.
It's amazing. Like when I don't follow science and Western medicine to the T, but some of it that's been developed and has been sort of uncovered and coconut oils and all of these healthy fats and these things really make a huge difference in your diet and your overall feeling and in working out and being active and all of that. And especially when you're my age, when you're 47, like I need all the tricks that I can find. So that's butter, keto. It's a big one.
So
you're in Malibu, right? I see that look on your face. That judgmental look on your face. That's the problem with having cameras on during this podcast is you can't hide all this.
That's the point. I want you to, that you can call me out for it, for sitting here and going, oh my God.
All right.
You're in Malibu, right?
Yeah.
Bri?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're Malibu. So have you ever worked out with like Laird Hamilton and those guys? I know they do the big XBT life and it's a big, you know, they're all, those guys are health crazy.
No, for me, I have a trainer. I do a lot of like CrossFit weight training. He has a private gym over in like Reseda over there. For me, it's a big thing of like, I like being healthy and fit, but I don't want to look like somebody that spends all their time in a gym. I don't want to look like that's just my focus because it's not. I have to keep up with my kids. So I want to stay as active as possible. I don't want to get older and start having issues because I'm not working all that out. And you start learning as you get older that the heart is a muscle and you know, you have to be conscious of the brain and brain health and all of that goes together. Whereas when you're younger, you're like, as long as I'm working out, fuck the rest of it. It's all good. It's all inside. And then as you get older, you start realizing, oh, well, if I keep putting this in my body, it stinks. It backfires on me a little bit.
So, you know, one thing I don't think we've ever talked about that I've always been interested in, on our show, we like to kind of go back and find out how people got their jobs or how they landed in the entertainment industry. And I don't think I've ever asked you how you got the job on 90210. Obviously, everyone knows you from 90210. That is just... that's synonymous with your name, but how did that end up happening?
So I started acting way before 90210. I started acting when I was 9. Mm-hmm. I joined SAG and I was doing that. I was going to an elementary school and a kid that I rode the bus with to school, he was acting, he was doing commercials and stuff. And I thought that was really cool. So I went and I met with his agent and started acting and I did, like Knott's Landing when I was a kid. I did all these commercials and all this stuff. And so at the point when we did the pilot for 90210, that was probably the 11th or 12th pilot I had done. So it was kind of like, it was just another pilot. Like we were just gonna shoot one. It was a presentation thing for the network. Fox at that point was a really young fledgling network. And the concept didn't seem that awesome for the show. So I kind of expected like, oh, we'll do a pilot and then I'll go back into pilot season and go do something else. And then So I went in and auditioned, and Tori had seen me in some teen magazines before then, from doing Knott's Landing and all of that. So she had pointed me out to her dad. So she was really helpful in that for me. And then Aaron was just a great guy. But like, I went in, I'd known Doug Emerson for years. I'd known Shannon for years. I'd known Luke for a while. We actually did a Dr. Pepper commercial before we started shooting. And we became really good friends on that set. So then when we got to the set for 90210, I was like, oh, hey, what are you doing here? Oh, good to see you. Like, it was pretty cool because we had that sort of, you know, chemistry from before. And we had that in common. But yeah, 90210 was just a pilot. It was called Class of Beverly Hills when we did it. It wasn't great. So our hopes weren't that, I don't want to speak for anybody else. My hopes weren't that high. I was coming from a place of like, I've done a bunch of pilots and the odds are that pilots aren't picked up. So you do one and that's your job. And you go and do that. And it's like doing an episode of any show. And you go do one and then you move on. And Fox being as young as it was, I think that's what gave us the chance. I mean, that's the reason that we stayed on in the beginning for as long as we did, because nobody watched it. Nobody watched the first season at all. I mean, we would go promote the show at like pie eating contests and all sorts of stuff, and nobody could even remember the name of the show.
Wow.
And it wasn't until that summer when they did the summer episodes and all the other shows were in repeat and kids were out of school that literally overnight, like, it went from nobody watching the show to everyone watching the show.
And
it was crazy.
How did your life change after it blew up?
How didn't it change after the show blew up? I mean, that was... I was 17. It was insane. It was, I had up until that point, New Kids on the Block were really big, big in the scene. You'd always see like news footage and videos of them performing and kids rushing chain link fences and security all around and like the mayhem of it and the craziness of it. And then all of a sudden when that was happening with us, it was really surreal. It's odd. It's, you know, when you spend so much time watching other people go through something, you really feel removed from that. Like that's some other universe that you're just getting a peek at. And then when all of a sudden you're in that universe, it feels a bit like you're a guest in it. Like it doesn't feel like something that, that you alone deserve, which I didn't. People know my name from the show, but they know the name of the show. He's the guy from 90210. It's not like Arnold Schwarzenegger and you go, oh, he was in Terminator and he was in this, and, you know, so they know the name Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's a different experience that way. But the show was, I was so young. I took so much of it for granted, I think. Like I got to travel really cool places and have some really cool experiences. And I didn't really appreciate a lot of them because I was so young and I just sort of was in awe of all of it and felt like, I kind of felt like on some level, well, isn't this what everybody does? Like everybody like travels around and does cool stuff like this. Right. And it wasn't until you get older and you go, yeah, nobody gets to experience stuff like that. Like it's a rare few that get to experience something like that. But hindsight is 20/20 on that for sure.
Yeah, I had to get like therapy with you, but do you ever like regret it? Like, do you ever like beat yourself up and be like, man, I wish I was more present. I wish I was like appreciated more. I was more grateful for it. You know, did you ever do that?
No, because you can't. I mean, maybe I'm only answering this question now because of where I'm at, but I kind of feel like in life, you know, life just is what it is, and it's all about how we experience it and the people that we choose to be when we're in it. And I mean, looking back on it, sure, I wish I had been more present and I had appreciated it more, but that wasn't what it was, and I can't go back and change it now. So I, you know, now I appreciate those experiences as much as I can now. And I try and revisit little bits of that as much as I can now. And I try and tell stories to my kids about that experience as much as I can now, because that's my way of time traveling and doing that and appreciating that. And, you know, doing things like this, like doing the podcast with you and Dax and people bringing up stories that maybe I'd forgotten about, is a really good way of doing that. Cause it's amazing when all of a sudden somebody reminds you of something and you go like, I didn't remember that at all. Like, but now that you bring it up, everything's like, you know, flying back in. I remember all of it. I remember what I was wearing. I remember what I was listening to. I remember like, so all the pieces of the puzzle all suddenly come together, but it's, you never know when it's going to happen. But, I appreciate all of them. They're amazing. I mean, my life has been amazing. I can't complain about any of it. And even if I could, I shouldn't.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, partly the key to the success of the first show was because Fox was young and they gave you a chance. And then you guys did this reboot. What was it? Last summer, right? Last summer you did the reboot. I loved the reboot.
We both did. We loved it. We called each other right after and we said we enjoyed it. It was so,
it was, I mean, unique.
Listen, we're gonna kiss your ass a little bit. It was different.
That's,
it was
all right.
Fun.
I'll take it.
It was fun. It was different. It was, the first episode was like, what the fuck is going on? And then we realized what was going on. We're like, this is actually kind of cool.
It was, I thought it was brilliant writing. I just thought it was so different from anything that was out there. And it left me with huge question marks of like, is this show going to come back? Are they going to ever do it again? You know, you guys have kind of hinted, or I've heard like Tori hint, or, you know, some people hint that like potentially there's a life for it. Are we ever going to see this show again? Because it was so fucking good.
I don't think so. It's, you know, some people viewed it as like we were canceled, but that was never my understanding from Fox. I mean, from day one at Fox, it was a 6-episode summer event. So it was supposed to be sort of this mini series, and it was a great concept. It's the making of a reboot. It's what it takes to write and package and sell a reboot and for it to get picked up. And it happened to be the reboot of a show that was popular. And so we had the fun time of sort of playing versions of ourselves, playing the characters that we played before. So it was kind of a fun thing that way. But at the same time, we got to have fun with the characters, and it was a good time. We had a great time shooting in Vancouver, and I thought it was a really fun experience. And
but it did well. So why aren't we seeing more of it? That's what I like. You don't always get shows that people want back. So like, what? Why can't we get another season of it or 6 episodes?
Well, because I don't think your opinion translated into numbers, Dax. So,
but I remember it being one of like the highest rated things right when it debuted. No,
it was in the beginning, but then the show, the numbers week to week declined. They went down, which I was sort of expecting. I mean, I was expecting that people would tune in the beginning because it was like, oh man, this show that we've heard about forever or watched when we were kids is coming back. So everybody wanted to see what the show was about and see if it was enjoyable or not and all of that. And then a lot of people saw it and they went, okay, cool. Not realizing like, oh, there's only 6 of them. So you might as well just watch all 6 because it's not going to kill you for 6 weeks of programming. I thought it was done. I thought it was done really well. I know some people have sort of hinted at, you know, the possibility of the show coming back or getting picked up for more. That's not how I view the story. I don't want to call anybody out. I don't want to crush anybody's dreams, but that wasn't what I thought it would be. And that wasn't, my intention wasn't to do to make it another series, because I sort of feel like the story was told. At the end of the whole thing, we ended up at the Fox up front. The show got picked up, and we walk out on stage, and they intro us, and you know, we are ourselves. And so I felt like that was a fitting ending. That was the ending for what the show was supposed to be. I mean, beyond that, I don't know what you make the show. It's you end up what, shooting a bunch of episodes of 90210 within this thing, and what is the story? What is there to tell? Then it becomes this sort of serialized thing. And to be honest, that doesn't interest me a lot. I did 10 years of that show.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that was enough. And I like the stuff that I'm doing now.
Yeah. Who are you closest with from the show? Do you all keep in touch, or is some people you keep in touch more than others?
Yeah. I'm probably closest now with Ian and Jason.
More than Shannon?
I talk to Shannon all the time, but with this quarantine and with all of that, it's been hard because of the pre-existing condition for her that she's at such high risk for Corona and the damage that can come from it. So I've seen her a few times at like the grocery store and stuff like that, but she's really been quarantining and taking it seriously as she should.
Absolutely.
We talk to each other a bit. Sometimes I'll text her and she won't text me back for like 2 days. Hello?
I'm here. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I don't take offense to it. But yeah, she's sort of, you know, she's got her own stuff going on. And then Jason is a little better. He travels though a bit. He was traveling a bit to Toronto to work for his show. But when he was here in town, I would talk to him a lot. And I talk to Ian all the time. I talk to everybody, but Luke was probably, I was probably closest to Luke just because he was a really interesting guy. Like he would send text messages every once in a while that they weren't for any purpose other than just to reach out and let you know that he was like thinking about you. So he would send, we used to joke about In Living Color when Damon Wayans would do that skit, wrote a song about it, want to hear it, here it go. And he would just text me that, want to hear it, here it go. Like that's all he would text me. And it was just a shout out of like, oh, you know, are you there? And so you know, he would do that, and we would text each other random like Harry Connick Jr. quotes or Cable Guy quotes or In Living Color lines, and then I'd see him every once in a while, and you know, he was a really special person as far as just connecting with people. Like I've talked about it before, like he's one of the few people in life that I've met that if you spent an hour with him at lunch, that hour was literally with him. Like his phone, he would put it down and it was just all about you and how you're doing. And it was the most it was the most connected that I had felt with anybody, just sitting and having those moments. And so that's what builds that brotherly bond, you know, is having someone that does that you feel like really, really has taken the time to get to know you and love you for it and doesn't judge you for it and is there with good advice when you need it. But I talk to everybody at different times. Nobody has any sort of animosity, and anyone that ever did, that was buried a long time ago. I mean, we're all way too old. So we sort of, back when we were doing the show, you know, we were kids. So we would fight about stupid shit and argue about stupid stuff. And looking back on it now, it's all stupid stuff. And most of it, it's like, the fuck are we even arguing about?
Yeah.
When you guys like had those fights though, was it like during the filming or the production, and did the producers kind of get in the middle of it? Because again, you guys were all young. It's like, it's so stupid, but did it ever affect the filming of the show?
No, no, it, I don't think so. I mean, there were so many of us, and there were so many storylines. There was an A, B, and a C storyline to every episode. So those storylines kept us all pretty separate. So every once in a while, we would cross paths and have to do scenes with people that we didn't necessarily want to do scenes with or weren't getting along with at the time. But we were doing, at the height of the show, we were doing like 35 episodes a season. So we would do these double up episodes where we would shoot two episodes at once, have two crews, two directors, and you would shoot three scenes from this episode, and then you'd go over to stage three and you would shoot three scenes from the other episode. And so it got to the point where it was like, it was just a job. It was like, you get to work and it would be all day and you'd be exhausted by the end of it and you couldn't wait to get home. So conflicts with other people in the cast and stuff like that, really, they just didn't hold enough time or weight. There was too much going on, and it was insane at that point. I mean, we were all traveling on weekends and we were doing appearances and doing different stuff. And so there was so much going on that fights were sort of fleeting. It was like we would have them and then they'd be done within like 20 minutes. They'd be over.
Interesting.
What was the night that you realized you made it? Like, obviously the show's a success, but was there one night where you're like, fuck, I'm in this room and there's some crazy, what was the night like, dude, I'm in the game? You know, obviously you grew up in LA, but like, dude, this is fucking incredible.
I've told this story before. But the night that happened for me, we had gone to Disneyland for grad night. And it was a big deal. And we were on the Tomorrowland Terrace, that stage that comes up out of the ground. And not to date us, but like Another Bad Creation was performing. Wilson Phillips was performing. It was like, it was this big deal.
And I loved Another Bad Creation. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were there, and you know, we still, the show was relatively new at the time. And we weren't really aware of what was going on and how many people were watching it and how many people it affected and all of that. So we were at Disneyland for this grad night thing, and the stage was up, and it was like Wilson Phillips performing. And so there's all the underground tunnels underneath Disney. And so we were waiting in the tunnels to, when the stage came down, we would all get on the stage and ride it up. And so all of a sudden we hear all this like screaming and stuff upstairs. So I'm thinking like, oh, Wilson Phillips must be, you know, doing another song. Like it's an encore performance. Nobody can get enough of Wilson Phillips. So we had the idea of, okay, when the stage comes down and we all go on it, let's hide. Cause we were young and stupid, and we thought like, oh, nobody's watching the show anyway. So when the stage comes up, nobody will be on it. So we'll all be hiding behind like all these things that they had, you know, to decorate the stage. They had like boxes and all sorts of stuff. So we did, we hid, and the stage came up and we were all hiding. And so the stage was empty and it was like crickets in the crowd. Nobody was doing anything. There was no noise. And then we all at the same time popped out from wherever we were hiding, and people went like bananas. And like, no matter what you did, you could move your hand from your pocket to your hair and people would react to it. And it was the craziest experience ever. And that was the time for us on stage when we realized like, oh man, people are really watching this show. Like this is, we're doing okay. We're going to be here for a while. This is doing well.
That's so cool. I was also thinking, because like, you know, obviously 90210 is one of the very, very many shows that you've done. You've done The Anger Management, you've done Terminator. I mean, your IMDb page is just filled with stuff. Do you still have to audition to get parts like now? Like if someone calls you up, you still have to audition?
Yeah.
Really?
For the good stuff. Yeah. For the shitty stuff. No, They're like, we would love to have you on this project, you know. It's like, it's, you know, don't read too much into the dance number, it'll be fine, but for the good stuff I have to audition for it.
I think
that's what makes good stuff good, is that they make sure that people are right for characters. And so that's the stuff where it's, I'm more than happy to audition. I don't mind auditioning. I mean, auditioning, I've been on the other side of it, so I understand. I don't take the rejection of it so personally, because you can't. There are so many factors that go into it. It's writers, you know, having read the script and they had a certain person and a certain look and feel in mind. And if you don't embody that, then you may not get the part. Or if you come in with something that's just different enough, they go, Jesus, we never thought about that. That really works. And so you'll get a part because of that. But it's not, there are so many factors involved, and there's so many fucking actors that are doing it. So it's like, you go in, to me, I study my ass off. I go in, I do the audition, and then I throw the sides away and I forget that I ever went into the room to audition. And then if I get a call back, then it's like, oh, hey, send the sides again and I'll work on them again. Or I might still remember them. Chances are I won't, because my memory's not that good. Usually, like, I remember stuff just for while I need it. I did the same thing in school when I had tests. Like, you study really hard, you learn everything, and then as soon as the test is done, you're like, cool, never again. Like, I don't have to remember any of that stuff. Yeah, I don't mind auditioning, though. Auditioning is part of it for me, and I've been auditioning for stuff my whole life. So I don't take it personally. To me, it's exciting when I book something, and then when I don't, I don't think about the fact that I don't. I go in and audition, and then it's like, oh, if I get a call back, cool. I forgot that I even went in for that.
Yeah, you just move forward, move on. Do you still have to take like headshots and stuff, or
No. I have a feeling for the most part there are enough pictures online now.
Please refer to Google.
If somebody wants to see a current shot of me, there's some, you know, pap shot from yesterday of me coming out of a grocery store.
So. Yeah, exactly. But no, here's the thing is, though, like, I totally understand, like, you don't take it personal. Like, you go into an audition, if you get rejected or if you get the part, if you get the part, amazing. If you get rejected, you don't take it personal. But there's a lot of actors out there that, like, you know, and a lot of people out there that are desperately in need of money, you know? Right. Do you think that affects their work? Like, you're able to go in there, if I get the part, great. It's not going to change my life. Like, hey, listen, it'll be great money, but you know, you're able to go in there with the I don't give a shit attitude. If I get it, great. If I don't, I don't. But there's some actors there that, listen, if I don't get this part, I mean, I'm not going to be able, I'm going to have to move out of California. I'm going to have to move back to Montana. Does that ruin the audition process for me? Or how do you get to that point where you don't care?
Well, the thing that's shitty about it is for the people that you're talking about that put a lot more pressure on themselves when they're auditioning, I've been really blessed, like when pilot season comes around or auditioning period, you know, it's all different now that everybody's streaming, so you don't have pilot seasons the same way as you used to when it was just the networks. But I go in and audition for a lot of stuff. So it's a much wider net that I'm casting. You know, for a lot of these guys that are really dependent on booking the next job that they go in and audition for, they only get like three auditions during that time period. So it's like, okay, I need to book one of these three shows. Whereas I'm looking and it's like, okay, you know, chances are I'll book one of these 100 shows that I'm going in for. So I'm not sweating it that way, you know, but it's different. I mean, you have to really love this. You have to really love this business and really love acting. And when I say love acting, you have to love all of it. You have to love auditioning too. You have to love when you read sides and your mind thinking like, oh, this is fun. What can I do with this that's exciting for me as an actor? Like, I don't, you know, it's not the pressure of like, I'm just going to go in and do what's on the page, because everybody's doing what's on the page. Like, what separates you is going in and doing what you do. And either somebody gets it and they go, hey, that's really cool, or they don't. And if they don't, then they don't, and you're not right for it. And that's just what it is. I don't think you can't help being not right for something. I mean, if a part is written and it's a very specific kind of person and they have a very specific tone and look and feel to a character, then that's, if you don't fit that, you don't fit that. And it's not, it's just the way you were born. It's who you are. You know, people book things for completely different reasons. You know, I remember when I was younger hearing the story of James Cameron finding Eddie Furlong in an arcade playing games. And he wasn't an actor at all. And James saw him in an arcade and he ended up doing, you know, Terminator 2, which was a huge opportunity that was. So I kind of have the feel of like, I try not to think of anything as lucky, more so than if you love it, it's all about preparation meeting opportunity. So if you're prepared for whatever it is that you love to do and you bust your ass doing it, then when the opportunity comes to show what you can do, you're ready. The thing you don't want to do is for somebody to go, hey, oh yeah, I heard you're an actor, do something, and you're like, I don't really have anything. You know, it's that, like, that could be a moment gone that you've lost. So I kind of feel like people need to be prepared for what they do, the same way that artists carry portfolios in their car. You know, people have a way of showing their work and they're proud of it, and either in pictures with their phones or whatever, people are sort of connected to it and are always prepared to share what it is they do and send people to their website and do all that. And what we do is different, but it has to be viewed the same way.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Bri, you mentioned paparazzi taking photos of you. I mean, it's no surprise that, you know, it's no secret that, you know, you've kind of been all over the tabloids lately, your personal life, people you've been spotted out with, everyone jumping to conclusion. What is that like? What's it like being like this focal point of everyone?
It sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's very, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, what people normally do when they get out of something is they date. They talk to multiple people at once. They, you know, some people use dating apps. They talk to multiple people. They go on multiple dates. They spend time with people until you feel a connection with somebody, and then something builds from there. What's unfortunate for me in this situation is I'll literally go on one date with somebody, not even a date, just like meet somebody, have lunch. And all of a sudden it's written as like, oh, his new fling and his, ooh, he's, you know, he's playing two women at the same time. And it's like, no, I literally spent one time with each of these women. Like, I'm not playing anybody. Like, this is, you know, my life is just, it is much more under a microscope than somebody else's. But when I hear that complaint or that, you know, comparison of like, oh, he's talking to multiple women, it's like, yeah. Like, isn't that what you're supposed to, like, isn't that dating? Like, you talk to multiple people. It doesn't mean I'm a shitty person. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to meet people and experience life. And then when you start finding commonalities with somebody, then it becomes something bigger, but you have to be willing to get out there and put yourself out there. But I get judged for it. I think unfairly, but it's a weird situation. It's strange. It's strange being under such a microscope that is, it's funny, you know, people write about it and they're like, oh, you know, where are the kids? You know, where? And it's like, well, I had lunch once this week. Like, you know, you guys know, like, you know, paparazzi take pictures one time. They get pictures of you going somewhere, coming out of someplace, and then a story is created, and then all of the outlets buy the same pictures and the same story. So it's not like I have spent an active week going out and seeing somebody. Literally, paparazzi caught me on a Monday. And then I don't leave my house for another 2 weeks. Like, I'm home all day, every day with the kids. but I went and had lunch with somebody. Like, that's, so to me, that, you know, that that's a, the one view doesn't justify the other. Like, they're very, it's, you guys know, coming from that world, like, it's very, what you read in print and what you see is much different than what the actual experience is. I talked about that with this girl, Tina, that I've spent some time with. All of a sudden there was this story of like, oh, the new love interest, whatever. And I was on camera talking to a guy saying like, I met her literally on the sidewalk as the guy was taking pictures. That was the very first time I'd ever met her, said hello to her in person, like anything. So, and within 15 minutes, it was like, oh, his new love interest and the new thing. And it's like, it's a little premature, don't you think? That's not the best journalism.
Do you ever get nervous though that like, you are so high profile that like, do you get nervous that people may want to date you just because it's good for their status?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But what am I going to do about it?
The reason I asked, because like, I thought that was strange that like there were paparazzi there the second you met her. Because where were you guys? Where was that?
At her restaurant at Sugar Taco. It's a place on Melrose. And from what she was saying, because they have a lot of celebrities and people there, there are paparazzi that just hang out there because people frequent the spot all the time. And especially now during COVID, because there's not many restaurants that are open. But yeah, this guy just came out of nowhere with a camera and was taking pictures, and we were sort of caught off guard. But you never know.
Yeah. And
you never know what somebody is in it for and if there are ulterior motives. And it doesn't, you know, I wouldn't necessarily fault somebody if there were.
Yeah.
I would fault somebody if they lied to me about it. If I said, hey, so did you have something to do with somebody being at this place? And they said no, and they actually did. That would be more of an issue for me, because that's an honesty issue.
Mm-hmm.
If you said to me, yeah, you know what, this is what I do, and like, I had somebody there to take pictures, and you know, how do you feel about it? And do you not want me to do that anymore? Like, we have a discussion about it. That's fine. People are people, and people have their own careers and their own state of mind of things. And so I'm open to all of that. As long as somebody is honest with me. When they're not honest, that starts creating the problem for me, because that is the red flag thing for me. Like, I try and clear everything else out and not hold people responsible for other people's actions and whatever, because I don't, that's not fair. But I think everybody, one of the things everybody has in common is you either lie or you don't. So I want to find somebody that's honest with me and truthful about stuff. And I want to be able to talk about all of that. And even if it's uncomfortable, then it's an uncomfortable conversation that we have. And it's a, you know, it's a 15 minute conversation and then it's done. And, but it's the unknown shit that is scary and it sucks.
Where are you meeting these women, like Tina, Courtney? Like, where did you meet these girls?
So I met both of them on Instagram. I had no idea that Instagram was so much of a dating site until I was single, because I, up until then, my Instagram page was like, I posted pictures of benches and trees and the ocean and my kids doing stuff here and there. Like, my Instagram page was very, I was a total like married dad on it. And then all of a sudden, you know, I started getting DMs, and when Megan and I separated.
Yeah, how quickly does that happen? How quickly does the press find out and then DMs start flowing in?
Instantly.
Oh my God, people have no shame.
No shame. No shame in their game at all. So, you know, I would get these DMs right away, and when you're going through something like that, and you know, and you're hurting, you feel better when somebody is, when it seems like somebody is taking your side. And so originally when I was getting these DMs, it was from people saying, you know, hey, keep your head up, it'll all be fine, don't worry about it. And so I would make the mistake of responding and saying like, thank you. Not realizing that I'm then opening some sort of a door, because that wasn't ever my experience of Instagram before then. I didn't think Instagram was as much of a dating site as it's turned out to be. I remember, you know, when I hung out with Courtney, getting a call afterwards from somebody saying, hey, there are pictures of you with Courtney Stodden. And I was like, oh yeah, how do you know her name? Like I had no idea who she was or any of the past anything. Like I had done no research at all. And it wasn't until I was told like, oh, this is the past and this is kind of who this person is and this is what, you know, you might have to experience. Then you have that moment of like, oh shit, like what have I done? Like why, you know, why did I, the, shit, you know, hindsight again, 2020. I wish I would have known beforehand. Courtney was a really nice person though. I mean, I don't want to badmouth her. She may have done some of the things she's done and been the person that she's been and is the person that she is. But when I spent time with her, super kind, super polite. But you know, I had lunch with her one time. Like people made this big story out of it that it wasn't. And people have made this big story out of Tina and I that it wasn't. And I expect they're going to sort of make stories out of whoever I'm seen with. So, you know, ahead of time, mom, if you come over and we go out and eat, I'm sorry. If there are pictures of us, just don't hold my hand. Okay. Just don't do that, because that apparently confirms something and I don't want to confirm anything.
Now, did you
see, notice,
did you feel, I'm sorry, I just want to ask about Courtney. Did you feel a little betrayed by the hot tub video that she put out? Because seems like something that's like, this is like a personal thing. Like this, not every moment of us hanging out needs to be shared.
Well, it wasn't even so much about that. It was when something is shared out of context, and she knew she shared it out of context. She knew there wasn't any explanation of like, oh, hey, by the way, this video is from a month and a half ago, like when the pictures of us came out, or Ashley is a friend of mine, and so he was just saying hi to a friend of mine. Like that, none of that was there. So she literally posted that the same day that pictures of myself and Tina came out. So it was very apparent like why she had done it. She wanted to create a story and create some sort of some issues and something to be talked about and keep that going, which, you know, that's if that's the way she lives her life, it's the way she lives her life. I feel bad for her, because I feel like, you know what, if you had my opinion, if you had some good people around you that would go, you know what, you've dealt with enough crap and you're sort of viewed in a questionable way by a lot of people, take the high road of like, you met somebody, it didn't work out, but you guys had a fine time, you know, you wish them the best, like, because you can immediately change people's perception of you with that. If she had taken that, people right away would have been like, I didn't expect that from Courtney, and that's really fucking cool that she did that, and good on her. But she wasn't given that advice. And instead it's been about like, let me drag this out as, you know, as long as possible. I mean, let me write a song about, it's, which is fucking insane. That's insane. Let's call that like it is. That's insane. I can't. I mean, you know, it's like, don't you need to have some sort of connection with somebody to write a song? Like, I don't know. What's funny too is when you read into the story a bit, she'll be like, oh, well, the song's not really about him. It's about love, but it was kind of inspired by that. It's like, no, it wasn't. You just wanted to put my name in the story because then people are going to hear your song and they're going to be interested in what you're talking about.
We had her on the podcast. She was fascinating and strange at the same time.
You guys both had her on?
Oh yeah, we had her on the podcast
a while ago.
A year ago or something.
Yeah, before all this.
Yeah. But the weird part was that she had like some guy come in with her that I swear that was like her boyfriend, but she doesn't acknowledge him as her boyfriend, that like she lives. Right. It was the weirdest situation I couldn't put together. And like I said, she's an interesting character.
She is, yeah. I don't want to be judgmental of anyone or do any of that, but that is, yeah, that's a totally different realm than my fucking world is in. I'm 47 with four kids, and I'm not you know, out walking my dogs in you know, bathing suits and shit like that. Like, I don't. It's just a very different life.
I got nervous because I was wondering because. You know, we saw with Megan being out, and then, you know, she's kind of with someone right now, MGK, but then we saw you, and then we started to see the photos with Courtney and Tina. So as a viewer and as a person who sees these stuff in entertainment news, I called Dax on this. I was like, dude, is Brian trying to be seen with other girls? Like, I didn't know if this was a business move or, you know, and that's what, you know, by talking to him, I was like, dude, Dax is like, that's not what Brian is. Like, something's... You know, I didn't know if he's picking the right women or what, you know, like it's scary because I don't know. So what's your relationship now? Like, what are you still kind of dating or how do you find women now?
I've been single this whole time. I dating, I guess. I mean, I'm open to meeting somebody, but I'm not. My focus, honestly, right now is on myself and healing with all of this and my kids and them experiencing it the best way that they can. But I can't really put a label on what I'm doing. Cause it's different. What I'm doing compared to how it's been portrayed are two completely different things. Like I said, you know, there are pictures of Tina and I twice, and pictures of Courtney and I once. So even if you just go by that, that's three dates total. It's three dates since November of last year.
There was a story on TMZ saying that Tina broke up with you. And then I was like, if you're saying that, I was like, what was that?
So Tina's really cool. Tina is really an intelligent woman. She's the one who approached me and she said to me, she was like, you know what, with the craziness going around you and Megan and the whole situation, I think what would be best for you is to take some time with just your kids and yourself and really work on like just being alone and healing yourself and going through that. And that was cool coming from her because that she didn't need to say something like that. She didn't have to say something that would exclude her so much from my life. But she had a really good outlook on it. And she felt like, okay, I really like you as a person. And so as your friend, my opinion is, you need to do this. Like that, you shouldn't be in that mode of finding somebody or rebounding into something or finding somebody that's a great distraction or whatever, because those never work out. Those are distractions. And at the end of the day, the only person that can heal you is you.
I think that is a wonderful thing to say. I think because I'm protective Dax friend, you know, like I'm like, Brian, I feel like that was a great thing to say. My heart hurt for you when I see it on a national platform. And I'm like, why is this information being put out there? And I think that's the part where I was like, damn it. Like, can't Brian just like move along with his life here? And like, not everything has to be like published to the world. So I think that's when I read it, I just like hurt for you. 'Cause I'm like, no one needs to read this right now.
Right.
He knew you're not that guy.
Yeah, it's like I know the real Brian. I think that you are such a genuine, nice, kind person. You're like Mr. Family Man, an awesome dad. And so I think that's when I like read these stories, I'm just like, I don't want you to be hurt by this stuff, you know?
Right.
So
yeah, it was smart of her, because the reality is I do need to take a step back, and the media circus around it all is insane. And I don't really want to be a part of it. And which is why I've been like posting more on Instagram and sort of taking control back of my life and what's going on in it and what I'm doing with my time. So it's not people capturing it and writing whatever they want. It's like, oh no, this is what I'm doing. Like, so people can see it and they can see stories of, Tina's really big on Instagram and she knows it really well. And so she was like, oh, you know, your fans would probably like to see some stories of you. And I was like, I don't even know how to like do a story on Instagram. so she showed me how to do that. And then my stories are like, you know, buying carrots because we have a pet rabbit. And like, here's me feeding the chickens. And it was like, you know, my life is a bit mundane and boring that way, but that's my life. But yeah, I appreciate that with you, Dax. I mean, I appreciate the fact that you and I can talk and that we'll have those, and that you know me, you seem to know me the way you do.
Yeah.
And respect me and always give me good advice and have my back. That means a lot to me.
Where does your relationship stand with Meg right now? Obviously, you guys have to co-parent, so it's not like you can go your separate ways and boom, it's done. You guys have three children together, so how is that going right now?
I think it's going as well as it can. I mean, it's there's no like rule book to it. I mean, there's no way of doing it right or doing it wrong. You know, we're learning as we go. I mean, the important thing for us is just communicating as much as we can. And I think for us, the realization of that we can't take the view of that it won't affect the kids, because it will. I think it's up to us and parents in general how it affects your kids. And whether it's a really negative experience for them or it's okay and they feel safe in it and they feel loved and they feel like, you know what, everyone still loves and respects everyone. Things are just different. But it's not bad different, it's just different. So I wish Megan the absolute best in everything. I mean, I want her to be completely happy for her and for the kids, and that's super important. I mean, nobody wants to be around somebody that's unhappy, because that's not, that nothing good comes out of that. That's a terrible situation. But it's, we're taking it day by day, and this is insane. I mean, this happened at an unfortunate time that nobody could have predicted, with, you know, with quarantine and the virus and all of that, where the news cycle is a bit bigger than we were prepared for or are used to, but it is what it is. You just sort of you roll with the punches, you know.
You know, with like a normal relationship, like a breakup or a split up, you know, you delete someone on social media and then you never have to see what they're doing ever again. And you go along with your merry way. Is it hard being in the public eye and being confronted with photos of what the other person is doing or what's going on? Because you can't escape it like you can when you're an average person. Is that tough?
You can if you ignore it and you avoid it, which is what I try and do. I mean, I try and not read anything and not look at anything and not involve myself in it. Just keep my head down and do what I do and, you know, focus on the kids and all of that. And I know she's going to do the same thing. I mean, you know, everybody's judgmental right now because she's out of the country working and she's not around. And it's like, oh, you know, they're trying to say, oh, the parenting, or, you know, what about the kids? And it's like, this is what we do. We travel and we work. And it's no different now than it's been before, except that we are no longer together. But this is what we've been doing for 15 years. We've been traveling and working, and, you know, when one person is traveling and working, the other one will step in and take care of things at home and take care of the kids. And this situation is no different. It's a little more, it's obviously a little more heightened than it was before because of the circumstances, but, it's no different. It's not for lack of caring. Megan loves her kids and would do anything for them and has, and will continue to. So, you know, stories and what, again, there it's, I try and always view it from the side of paparazzi taking pictures or publications selling magazines or driving people to their website, that it's all business. And so when I see somebody with a camera, instead of getting annoyed, like, oh, they're only there just to fuck with me, and that, you know, and they're just there for that selfish reason, I try and step out of that and go, okay, why are they really here? They want to get a picture so they can make some money and sell it, because nobody's making money right now. And this is just a job. This is just what they happen to do. So then when you look at all of it from that perspective, and you sort of remove yourself and try and put yourself in other people's shoes as much as possible, it's a much more accepting, understanding view of everything than staying just in your bubble and being pissed at anybody that tries to come into your bubble, and realizing that this is a world that we live in. There are other people that we cross paths with, and you know, our career choice mingles with other people and their career choice, and that's just the way it works. And I can either fight against it, even though they're always going to mingle, or I can try and see the humanity in all of it and understand it. I may not agree with some of it, but understanding it has been a huge point for me, and understanding, you know, that pictures are going to be taken of her, and stories are going to be written, and things are going to be said, and it's all for that purpose. It's that people want to drive people to websites and sell magazines and do all of that. It's not necessarily to personally attack me.
Do you guys have any rules about new partners meeting the kids? Because I know that's like a tough, hard issue to discuss.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I think I think this is a very interesting situation because of what we do and how much we travel and what, like, the reality is, like, right now, while Megan's out of the country working and I have the kids full time, it really limits the amount of time that I can spend doing anything but being at home and being with the kids. So as I think is the rule that a lot of people follow, is you don't want to introduce someone to your kids as somebody that you are interested in or that you have a relationship with until it's a very established relationship and something that you're taking very seriously, because you don't want people coming in and out of kids' lives. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, to me, that doesn't necessarily mean introducing your kids to people, because, you know, they meet people all the time. So I think that's a clear boundary. Like if you're seeing somebody and they happen to be coming over with other people and you introduce them just like you would anybody else as a friend, and there's no weirdness to it, and there's no PDA or, you know, any of that, then I don't think there's any harm in that. But it has to be done in a responsible way. And we've talked about being as responsible as we can with the kids. And, you know, we don't want to put them in a situation or create something that makes them feel awkward or odd. We want to make this as positive an experience for them as possible.
Do you think you'll ever get married again? Does that even interest you?
Right now, no.
No.
That's speaking for right now, no.
No.
Never say never.
Yeah.
How did you find out, like, you know, obviously the conversation, how did you find out that she was with Machine Gun Kelly? Did she tell you, or did you read about it?
No, I found that in my own way. And that's as much detail as I'll give you on that one. I didn't read about it or anything like that.
Gotcha. I respect it, man. You're always, you know what? This is so great because you're always so private about your life. And is that just how you are? You just like to be private, or is that, you know, did that evolve when you started being with, you know, you're with Megan, or?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm sure a lot of it came from her. I don't know if I am that private. I mean, I try and be respectful. So I think that can be misinterpreted as private sometimes. But I kind of feel, and Dax knows this about me, like I'm pretty open about stuff. Like I don't, when people talk to me, I don't feel any shame in sharing hurt or stories or situations or any of that. And then if there's something that I don't want to elaborate on, then I just don't. But it's not one of those like, hey, I don't want to talk about this at all, because it's a big part of my life. I mean, this has been a big part of my life and who I am and part of what is shaping me in negative ways and in positive ways. So I kind of feel like, you know, I have this crazy platform, which I don't totally understand, but okay. if people say so, then I'll take it. But I have this ability to share my life and possibly give people little light bulb moments or little things that they can apply to themselves. And that's cool. People have done that for me. I've had light bulb moments because of things that other people have said. And that's not because they've chosen to not say anything. I don't necessarily think that silence is a good thing. I think that being responsible in speaking is a good thing. But sometimes a lot more is said in silence than people realize. And sometimes when you give people silence, then you open up the door for them to connect their own dots and make their own story. And I don't want people to be able to do that. That was why, like, I did my podcast when Megan and I had first separated, because I wanted people to hear from me, unedited, exactly what was going on. So it was like that. You're not going to have to ask me about it anymore. You're not going to wonder, you're not going to make up your own stories. There's not going to be all this press of like what happened here or there, but it was nice because what I said, people listened to, and then literally every story and all the press following that was exact quotes from what I had said in the podcast. And it couldn't be misquoted because people could listen to the podcast and they would know right away, like, oh, that's not what he said at all. So nobody wanted to dare misquote because they knew that it could be fact checked easily.
Yeah.
So that's a line that I always try and walk along. Like I don't necessarily choose to be completely private unless I feel like, you know what, that's my own business. And so I'm going to choose not to share that with somebody, but that's few and far between.
So I've got my last question for you, because we've kept you way longer than we were supposed to.
I have no, oh Jesus, 12, 13. Yeah, you have.
But I want to hear your craziest paparazzi interaction. Like, what was the story that you were like, holy shit, that was wild. I don't know if it's like them following you down the street. I don't know if it's like them taking photos in the weirdest spot. I'm just curious of like your craziest paparazzi interaction.
I think so paparazzi sort of came up and started, like, I saw it all happening because there was no paparazzi back when we were doing 90210. And then when Megan went and did Transformers and all of that, we saw it starting, and I knew, like, it was this up and coming thing. And I watched it happening with Brittany and with Nicole Richie and that whole, and Paris Hilton and all of that. There was one time though, this older house that we lived in at Woodrow Wilson and Mulholland over in that area, we had a Cairn Terrier that, Cairn Terriers are just loud dogs. They just like to bark at everything. They just love to be heard. That's their thing. And so we had this Cairn Terrier that anybody that would walk by, any noise it heard, it would bark. It would do that. And one of the neighbors called animal control because our dog was barking. So I was in the house and somebody rang at the gate and I answered the phone and they said, oh, it's animal control. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. So I went out to the gate to open the gate. And when I opened it and this woman, this animal control officer was standing there, there were probably 30 paparazzi standing right outside the gate, and they were all like, hey, good morning. And they all started. And so she came in real fast and we closed the gate so nobody could get any pictures. But it was this real, like, it was this total surreal moment of like, fuck, I am a prisoner in this house. Like, this is, I need like a bat tunnel. Like, I need, you know, I need something to be designed that I can like sneak out of here and sneak back in and nobody knows that I've gone anywhere. And unfortunately we couldn't do that. But, that was a moment with paparazzi where I felt that sort of house arrest feeling of like, okay, I've now been barricaded in here. Like, this isn't, I can't leave and drive, because when I drive, they follow me, they take pictures wherever. It doesn't matter how fast I drive or if I try and wait to make a left until the last minute where they should have stopped, but they don't. They're like, oh, fuck it. They just honk and they run through lights anyway. So it just became this craziness and it became way easier to just stay at home.
Wow.
Not because we wanted to, but because that just was what it was. I mean, you and I talked before about like the Hawaii trips that Megan and I would take.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we would get to Hawaii and think like, oh, we're on vacation. And there would be paparazzi on the beach trying to take pictures of us through our hotel window blinds So we didn't even want to leave our room. And it was like, we're in fucking Hawaii. Like, this sucks. We can't get away from this at all. And at the point when you start feeling like you're a slave to all of it, then you realize like, okay, something has to fucking change. Something has to give.
Yeah. Crazy, dude. Such a wild life. It's so bizarre. Yeah.
It's insane.
Well, I appreciate you giving like an insight to what that life is like, because I don't think people just don't really realize they hear about it, but you just making a you humanize it.
Yeah, because everyone goes, "Oh, being famous, it's so awesome," and you know, there's all these perks, but there is a side of it that maybe is not all fun. And I'm not saying that you live a terrible life by any means. Don't take it like that. I just think that there is a reality behind the curtain too.
Yeah, it's it. I think my life and a lot of other people's lives are viewed in very different ways because the tabloids and the media sort of frame them that way. And so they get these little slivers of things and they assume that's their life. And it's like, no, that is a tiny little snapshot of what my life happened to be during that 30 seconds when that picture was taken.
Yep.
That's 30 seconds of weeks of my life. So if you look at the 30 seconds of your life, or if anybody looked at, you know, 30 seconds of their life, like a time when they think like, thank God nobody is around with cameras, and then imagine if somebody was, how shitty that would be.
Yeah.
And feeling like, okay, I can't do anything stupid because it's seen by everyone and it's judged by everyone.
Right. So. Well, thank you, Ryan. We're not going to keep you. I'm sure.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Good
luck with everything. Congratulations on the show doing well.
Thank That's you. Awesome.
Bro, thank
it was
you
fun
so
having
much,
two
buddy.
Of my favorite people on at the same time, chatting all together. But again, thank you, Brian. People can find Brian on obviously Instagram once he figures out how to use it. It's just Brian Austin Green now.
Yeah, which I newly changed. It used to be Arnt underscore you underscore that. And somebody was like, what the fuck is with you and all the underscores? In your name, like nobody's ever gonna find you, and I was like, all right.
So now he is findable at Brian Austin Green. But again, thank you
and
for
Brian.
Your...
Do me a favor before these girls, respond to DM. Google these girls, okay, dude? Can you do me a favor? Just Google these girls.
Again, hindsight is 2020 in this situation. Like, I don't respond at all anymore.
I love it. Well, thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. Thanks for your honesty and just the reality and just speaking up about just. What's life? Your normal? I really appreciate it.
Right on. All right. Good to know you, man.
Good time.
All right.
Dude.
Crazy, right?
Insane. I mean,
I told you he's like the most honest, genuine, like nice guy out there. He was really just a sweet person. And I think that's why I've like felt like a little overprotective of him over the last couple of weeks. Yeah. Like seeing all these stories, and I just feel like, and it wasn't like he was getting a bum rap or anything. I just felt like he was misunderstood. And, I just know what a nice person he is.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. We always say this, but I honestly fucking mean this. I really do. I could have sat there and talked to him for another hour and a half.
Dude, we were literally supposed to have him on for like a half hour, maybe 45. It's almost been an hour and a half.
But you know, Timber's like, even like the first part of our conversation about like biohacking and MILF and hell, I was like, I'm already enjoying the conversation. I don't like, this is my shit. Like, yeah. I just, you're right. That's my first time really kind of connect with him. But you are right. I could have kept talking to him forever. So now that we're done with the interview, I always like to ask you, Dax, what is the big takeaway that you took from this interview with Brian Austin Green?
The big takeaway is I think he's learning a new life is what I see. I think that he has been in a relationship for many, many, many years. I think that he's trying to figure out not necessarily like who he is, but like where his place is in life. You know what I'm saying? Like you go from being like Brian and Megan to now you're Brian, father of, 1, 2, 3, 4 kids. And I think he's just trying to like figure out like what's right, what's the right step. Like, should I be dating people? Should I not be dating people? Like, is it look weird if I'm not? But like, I want to meet people because I also don't want to be a lonely person. So I think he's just trying to figure out himself right now.
Yeah, I was glad that he explained a little bit what he's been seeing in the tabloids a lot, because, you see Megan with Machine Gun Kelly, then you see Brian with these other girls that are not Machine Gun Kelly. You just see him on the street, the paparazzi catch him. Like, is this him trying like to get his face back out there to say that he's moved on too? I don't know. It was just a really weird situation, but I was glad that he clarified it. Like the Courtney Sodden thing. It was just one time, like he just went and got lunch. But interesting, they all met him on Instagram. Yeah. They just DM'd him on Instagram. So if you're some horny girl, listen, Brian's still a very good looking guy. You know, if you have a clean record, I highly recommend reaching out to him, but he will potentially say hi.
Not really. He's just a great person. But no, that was fun. It was interesting to, you know, hear his perspective on life. He has a very different perspective because, listen, he has really been one of those people that is at the focal point of the paparazzi. You know what I'm saying? Like, his relationship was constantly photographed, constantly scrutinized, you know, at every step of the way. So, you know.
But Dax, let me ask you this. Because he was very aggressive with the paparazzi, because he didn't give up the shot, do you think that became like a battle for the paparazzi that they wanted the shot even more?
Oh, or is it just more of like, yeah, I think the more elusive you make it, the harder to get it, then the more valuable it becomes.
Interesting. So hindsight, would you say, hey, just give up the shot, give them what they want and they'll leave you alone? Or if you, even if you give them what they want, they would still keep attacking you because then it's an easy shot.
I feel that I can't talk about that because I can't understand it. I'm not, yeah. You know, I have no knowledge. I've personally been photographed like, what, 4 times maybe in my life by a paparazzi, and it was weird and awkward, but I can't imagine you trying to go to a store and everything that you wear is criticized. Every, you know, one hair is out of place and you get put on a bad fashion list. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't do anything. So I can't say what they did was right or wrong, but like, it worked for them. You know what I'm saying? They navigated through it. So,
dude, insane, man. Insane life. Well, guys, thank you for listening. Like and subscribe. And you can find me at Adam Glynn on all social media platforms. You can find Dax Holt at Dax Holt. We're on TikTok. Follow us on TikTok at The Hollywood Raw. And, you know, thank you again to Parkville Media, to
Historic,
to Primetime Signatures. And we'll see you guys later.